Hey, this is Rob Stone from Fox Sports.
Hey, guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
Get off the bench!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I...
Ball's going to bounce down. It's free in the box. Bicycle kick! Goal! Rowdies! What a play! What a shot! And it's 1-0 Rowdies!
Good evening. It is Thursday night as we're recording this. We are not live on Radio St. Pete for technical problems that for once are not my fault, nor Steven's. This is another episode of the Unused Substitutes, part of the Beautiful Game Network, presented by Roughneck Scarves. Oh, I can't even think of a funny intro. Steven, how the hell are you?
Well, at least the internet at my house is working. That's why, for yes. Those listening, this is why Matt sounds so strange today, is that he hasn't had internet access in a week, and we can't exactly go somewhere alternate to, you know, host the show live, because, of course, the pandemic! So, yeah, we're stuck in this nightmare with you guys.
Yeah, I'm currently on our conference call via my cell phone, talking through a Bluetooth headset. Because I have a nice new fence, but I suddenly don't have an internet connection, and I have an internet provider that doesn't like to respond to emails and phone calls. So it hasn't quite been fixed yet. So, that's why we're not live, and that's why I probably sound weirder than I usually do, but we're still going to give you your Rowdies Talk Radio. We're still going to give you the Green and Gold Gospel. By the way, did you see we were adding converts to the flock now? Steven, have you noticed this?
I did not know this. What are we talking about?
So there is a podcast out there called Soccer Crush, and it's a group of Cincinnati fans, and kind of their theme, I guess, is like every week they nominate players and have a vote for who's going to be their crush of the week. And then it kind of turns into a podcast where they talk about the player, that team or whatever. One of the nominees last week was Leo Fernandez, and we retweeted it and encouraged people to go vote. The team caught wind of it. Leo's wife heard about it and was spreading the word. And they had the largest number of voters ever. I was listening to their show today. And it was a landslide for Leo. Like, it was one of those where you feel like the lead is too big and you need to check like an hour before voting ends to make sure people aren't just like waiting to come jump in. It was never in doubt. So they have decided that due to the response, the quantity and quality of the response, that they that we are fun hangs, and they are now all going to be Rowdies fans as well. So welcome.
Hey! Welcome.
They also were interested in buying some merchandise, but since you can't really do that from their Rowdies right now, we're going to hook them up with some scarves and send some stickers and stuff too.
Welcome. Tampa Bay Rowdies, you've been around for about, 40-something years, and we've won 2 championships. There, you're all caught up.
Oh, they've been listening. They shouted us out on their show that published today, and we got a couple mentions in there, so we'll throw some mentions back to them. But yeah, it's a fun show. Definitely worth a listen.
Good. If that's awesome.
As Mike Pendleton tweeted, if for nothing else than to hear just how cute Leo Fernandez is, which there's no arguing with that. I mean, I feel confident in it. I mean, he's just having a heck of a season. 3 goals, 2 assists, crush of the week. Like, I don't know why they shut down the Ballon d'Or. Just give it to Leo.
Just give it to Leo. I'm all for that. It sounds great. If everything else on the Rowdies was going as well as what Leo was doing, this would make for a much more interesting episode. But unfortunately, this weekend didn't really go as planned. To some.
No,
I'll say this. It didn't go as well to some people, but I've got that nugget for later.
It's one of those weird combos where you got the right result, I got the right number of our goals, at least. All right, so let's get into the game, which by luck of me having no internet, I did not get to watch as it happened. I was following along with it on Twitter. I did get to watch the first half at work the other day, sneaking off the work Wi-Fi, but went to watch the second half today, and it was not working. Which is why I suspect I have somewhat of a brighter outlook on the game. Final result was 2-2. Rowdies 2, North Carolina 2. Goals by Sebastian Wenzati got his first of the season, and Leo Fernandez with another off a set piece. We struck early, we struck often, and then we struck out after halftime. And actually, you know, honestly, going back and watching it in the first half, you could really kind of start to sense a shift in the momentum. And I don't know if you listened to the latest Steal Some Time, but they kind of mentioned that as well too. And Neil addressed it in his halftime comments. So I'll go my good, bad, ugly. My good is the first like 35 minutes of the game. 2 goals, midfield looking pretty well as far as stopping the attacks for the most part. But there were some signs in there. Like there was some foreshadowing. Christo for North Carolina managed to get in a couple times, put one in the net that was called back for offside. The bad was I did not get to watch the second half, so I can't really give you too much of a good opinion on it. The ugly, they mentioned it on air, and they mentioned it again on Steal Some Time, and this is going to sound like bad, but it's not. Like, the grounds crew, and they mentioned like the coaching staff, the technical staff getting involved too, like they did as good a job as possible of keeping the field in a condition to play the game on during the weather delay that kept the game from happening for starting on time. But yeah, man, if you watch it on the broadcast, the field was really, really wet, and that contributed. I think, you know, I don't know if the guys got tired running on the wet field, the legs got heavy or something. But man, I think that really factored into the game, especially going into the second half. Not being able to match up or countermatch the substitutions made, the moves made by Dave Sarakin to go into the second half. Steven, what about you? What's your good, bad, ugly?
Well, I'm going to take a slightly more conservative approach to this. I think for that question, my good, and it's almost more like even like a season recap to this point, it feels like, but Leo and Gonzati are just, they're on fire right now. And, you know, it's great to see that their performance carrying over from last year is just continuing. These are two guys that have been absolutely solid everywhere where they've gone. And they are the stalwarts of our offensive threat right now. And so I think it's hard to not be excited about that if you're a Rowdies fan, because you're hoping that the other players start to step up and contribute on a more consistent basis, and not everything goes through those two players the whole year, but at least we have consistency offensively from somewhere. My bad is confusing because I almost have two different directions I want to take to this, but they're sort of kind of related. Substitutions. Now, obviously the one sub that we made, you know, reasonably beforehand, or, you know, early in the second half-ish, was Kyle Murphy coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Murphy had just a hair over 20 touches the entire half that he played. If I'm not mistaken, it was something like 25, 30 minutes, I think he played in that game, maybe a little bit longer than that. He barely touched the ball that entire second half. That was a problem. That's a problem for me because one thing that we've seen and I've harped on is a player like Tejada drops deeper to get balls and pressure central midfielders, especially the center defensive midfielder. That's one of his things, is that level of energy that he brings. And it kind of almost felt like we just weren't doing that very often, especially in the second half. I mean, there were moments in the game where just like things disappeared, like in the right around the 62nd minute, 66th minute, like there was just no urgency from anybody on the field. And I hate to pick on him a little bit because of this, but if you're going to be the sub in the second half, you should be one of the guys running around the most. I mean, I mean, honestly, like you should be one of those guys. And for him to kind of be disappearing, I guess you could say, from the field for long stretches, that's concerning to me in general. But the other thing is it kind of points out to a bigger problem. I tweeted at halftime that I was really surprised we didn't make any subs at half. That really surprised me. Because here you've got a 2-0 game on, you know, as you mentioned, a field that is a bit sloggy in the end that we were defending, which you could make an argument is actually a benefit to the defense rather than a negative. But, you know, the fact was is that Dave Sarakan, being the coach that he is, you knew for a fact he was going to make an adjustment in the second half. He does that. So what did he do? The adjustment that he made primarily was that he switched Ben Spies and Haji Berry. He flip-flopped them. So Berry ended up playing on the right side. Spies ended up playing on the left side in that second half, which was opposite the first. That little adjustment, among with one or two other like little things, but primarily that was the major tactical shift, was wild. Because obviously that completely changed the course of the game, because Leo is not as good defensively as Demboya is at times. And so as a result, you've got Taylor and you've got Spies absolutely destroying down our left side. So, you know, I think that's my negative, is that as a part of the Kyle Murphy comment, it's the lack of substitutions in general. Now, I get the fact that Neil Collins said in the interview since then, for one thing, he puts the blame of the loss on himself. In general, whether it was a motivational issue or tactical issues, he put the blame on his own shoulders, which I respect him for that. You got to make a sub. You got to make a couple subs. And I get the fact that, that's where I was going with that, Neil was saying that he didn't think that the substitutions on the bench fit what he needed going as that second half progressed. I don't know if I agree with him there. I just can't. I honestly can't. Now, I don't know if there's injuries that play a factor into that, but honestly speaking, I cannot believe that is the case here. When it comes to my ugly for this game is the one moment with Lucky. That I have to put that as my ugly, because that giveaway was just so bizarre. I mean, he legitimately just played a through ball right for North Carolina. I honestly, I've gone back and watched that like six times. I have no idea what he was thinking. I don't know what the thought process there was. It was a deliberate like pass backwards. And I don't even know who he could have been trying to go to for that pass. Like, it was just the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
You ever get that feeling? You ever just get that feeling during a game something bad's about to happen?
Yes, all the time.
I'm following this on Twitter, and I felt that second goal coming. Like, just I was like, okay, we're getting close to the end. That's, and it's just, you know, whether it's just, I don't know, experience or just a, you know, natural sense of cynicism or something. I felt that goal coming, and it was one of those, okay, let me refresh the tweet, scroll up, goal NCFC. Yeah, okay, I expected it.
Agreed. And again, that really ties into the lack of urgency that we were playing with in the second half. I mean, there was a couple of moments, right? Again, right around that 65th minute mark, roughly area, where we had possession in the second half, and we had the ball on their end of the field in the second half. It's not like we were completely devoid of any offense at all. But yet, so many times you saw players just walking around, players not making an effort to check to the ball, not making that off the ball run, not making a dribble, not just not playing. You know, and it was funny because that was the theme that we were screaming about for those that could go there. We were like, guys, why are you sleepwalking? Because it honestly felt like the entire second half, we were just sleepwalking the entire time.
Yeah, and if you're watching the broadcast, and I'm watching the game, and you could tell the last like 10, maybe out to 15 minutes, like there's a definite momentum shift. The commentators even talking about it. Kelsey Steele, who was filling in as a sideline reporter, mentioned you know, that Neil had set, specifically called out, you know, the first 30, 35 minutes were really good. The last, 10, 15 minutes, not as great. We'll get that turned around, you know, coming out of halftime. Unfortunately, didn't. And for the first time under Neil's leadership, first time they've dropped points when having a two-goal lead. Dropped a two-goal lead once, but came back and won the game. Actually, I think it was his first game in charge, to Toronto FC 2, but first time dropped points. And I kind of think it may not have been the most fun bus ride to Birmingham today based on that.
Yeah. You would hope, I mean, not.
If I had the choice of being on a bus with Neil Collins after a 2-0 win or a 2-2 draw where we came from ahead to tie, I know which one I'm going to take every time.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on. The starting 11 versus your prediction. There were talks that certain players who had been injured might be back out there. Guys like Jan Ecker and Domodoro, who came off substituted off early in the previous game, due to tackles and studs and stuff, would be available, end up not even being on the bench for the game. Anything that stood out to you or anything that surprised you as far as who started, who didn't, the who came on, who was used as a substitute?
Nothing in particular when it comes to Ekra and the Adoro replacements. Those fit right in line to what we were expecting. I'll say this as a comment on the game in general. Steinberger did not play that great as an attacking midfielder in the defensive role. I know it's contradictory, but to a certain extent. But if you look at passing maps for North Carolina, their defensive midfielders, their center defensive midfielders, had a ton of the ball and a lot of very accurate passing. And I think a lot of that has to come down to forwards not dropping back, but also Steinberger not pressuring as harshly as he needs to be. And that's going to be an interesting question kind of going forward, is whether that is a significant difference between, say, Steinberger and Ekra, potentially. Mm-hmm. That's going to be something that I'm going to have to keep a close eye on, is who performs better as a defensive player between those two. The only other thing that kind of surprises me is Johnson not coming on earlier. Again, Neil mentioned in since the game that Johnson really only had something like 10 minutes in him, supposedly,
yeah,
for a game.
That he hasn't been training really at all due to his injury.
I don't know, you know, ultimately, if there was anything he could have done differently when it came to Malik and Domboya, because I think that would have been a sub that needed to come on, because I don't believe Domboya is a 90-minute player per se. Not in the context I don't think he can do it. I don't see a scenario where it's worthy of him playing a full 90 over at least a 60-30 split with Malik. Like, because that's right. The thing, right? It's not saying Domboya is not worthy. It's just Malik adds something that Domboya can't offer. So it's just a question of how do you draw that balance between the two guys? So, and I think that that's something that I'm going to have to keep a close eye on going forward here again, as Malik has more opportunities to play coming forward here, seeing how that balance plays out ultimately.
And really only one surprise, I thought, from the opposition, the way they, and not even their lineup, but their bench. And I don't know if you watched or paid attention to any of the NWSL Challenge Cup games, but there was a game the other day where I think I'm pretty sure it's Portland. Their starting keeper was injured before the tournament even began. So they had their second string keeper in there. Well, she gets injured in one of the last kind of round robin games. So they've got their third string keeper starting, who had a hell of a match as they knocked out North Carolina Courage on Friday. That was both the North Carolina, the whole North Carolina family was in action. But on the bench was the goalkeeping coach, who is the former French international keeper, Nadine Angerer. On North Carolina's bench was their academy director. And it was kind of a late addition or a surprise addition to put him on the bench. So I'm not, you know, totally aware of injury issues going on with them or just manpower issues, but they had a kind of emergency name put on their bench as well.
Hmm. Oh, that's pretty cool. I did not know that either.
I don't think he got into the game at all. I think last name's Bradford. He's the U23 coach, basically academy director for them. Mm-hmm. So that was the one quirk that I saw. I mean, I expect to see guys. The one thing actually that I don't know if I'll call it a surprise, but I expected Stephen Miller to start based on the way he's played for the club the last couple seasons, but he came off the bench as a late substitute as well, mm-hmm. If I remember correctly.
Yes,
and worked out pretty well. I mean, Sarakin knows how to get the most out of that lineup, it looks like.
Yeah, he also knows how to beat. I think it's safe to say at this point that Sarakin is definitely not intimidated by Neil Collins' coaching system.
Oh, no.
I mean,
I don't think so.
Because that's one thing that, you know, Neil's system can potentially score goals in bunches. Like,
mm-hmm.
And so a lot of teams end up playing it that way defensively just to prevent, you know, bucket loads of goals. Dave is kind of one of those veteran coaches that just like, he's like, I've seen it all. I don't care. he knows really in a lot of ways how to attack it, which is why he's got such a great record against Neil, which is also why I called it as a draw and didn't anticipate a victory against him. Dave knows what he's doing.
Yeah. You called the draw. I called two goals for the Rowdies. I'm gonna claim half a point on that at least. I got that part. Man of the match, who do you have?
Man of the match, I am planning on going kind of just the easy route. And I get why it's lame. But I'm going to end up doing Leo. And it's funny because I ragged on him a little bit for his defensive efforts, kind of, sort of, not really. But that second goal on the free kick, granted, as goofy as that kind of a goal is, you still need to put a good kick in. And so I'm going to give it to him on not just that, but I mean, his overall play in general has been pretty good. But right. You need to get two goals, and we need to get goals off set pieces. So I'm going to give it to that just because, yeah, we need goals off set pieces. We need more of them. So there you go.
I would love to see another angle on his goal, because it really, at first, I thought it would have gone in off the foot of Lucky or someone else right there in front of the box, but none of them even made an attempt to claim it. And went running right for him. So it took me a minute or two from the camera angle to figure out, decide it was Leo. I'm like, man, they're all running to him. Like, that's really happy for a second assist. But yeah, he had an assist. He had the goal off the set piece. He's the crush of the week for a reason, Steven.
Exactly.
So how we count him out as man of the match, I don't think you can. All right. So enough of that. Let's take a look at some other Eastern Conference, some other Group H results. What happened in elsewhere around the conference?
So around the Eastern Conference, the highlight games of the week. One thing for certain is we were looking to see how Atlanta would do against a Memphis team with a garbage goalkeeper. And it turns out that Memphis changed goalkeepers this week. We wanted to see if Atlanta could kind of turn things around in Group H. Well, it ended up being a draw 2-2. So it kind of answers two questions. One, Atlanta's definitely not really all that good. Two, it also proves that Memphis does not have a goalkeeper. Like it's one thing to have a bad goalkeeper. I think it's safe to say at this point that Memphis hardly registered having the position at all. So I think that was kind of – that's the reason why we wanted to highlight that, because that was an important game for our group in particular. Around the USL Eastern Conference, there were three games in particular that were really important. St. Louis defeated Louisville at Flynn Family Stadium, and I'm dying. I am absolutely dying. I love it. I love watching Louisville squirm and – jeer and everything else. It's amazing. It's great. So I'm glad that St. Louis, as the playoff caliber team that they are, was able to go in and get 3 points from Louisville in their brand new palace of a building.
I see you try and sneak that one in there.
Yeah, I'm not sneaking anything. I am not sneaking anything. I have you know. That is not sneaking.
You know, Pittsburgh and St. Louis are good teams. I would have placed Louisville above either of them. Probably Pittsburgh would be a little bit closer to them than St. Louis. I'm shocked that they don't even have a point out of their first two games in their new home.
I am too. I'm legitimately stunned by that as well.
Was this stadium built on the site of some kind of war crime or something? Like, what is something problematic about it that's haunting them? But, you know, and I thought about it, and, it's just a coincidence, I'm sure, but Louisville's dropped their first two games in their new stadium. Charleston moves to their new location, and they lose their first game at home 2-1 to Birmingham, who, by the way, like, you know, Indy's getting a lot of attention and a lot of respect, and deservedly so, but I think this Birmingham team is really good.
Oh, Birmingham's great. Our preseason show, I guess you could say, about the groups and everything else, is I'm like, guys, Birmingham's no slouch.
The scary thing about them, and I'll get more to this later when we do the preview of them, they're doing it right now without the players you would expect to be doing this if they were there. Like, it's they're getting contributions from different corners. So Birmingham gets the 2-1 win over Charleston. Indy goes to Pittsburgh, and another Tyler Pascher goal. I think he's got like 5 on the season already. And Indy comes out with a 1-0 win. And, you know, they this week they've beaten Pittsburgh 1-0. They beat, what was it, the Whiz Kids, SKC 2, 2-1. They haven't hit their stride yet. They haven't really found their gear, and they're still getting a 3-point result, which is a big deal to be able to do. I think that they can turn in more impressive results, and I think they will in the near future.
I'm just going to clarify right now that I am a Pascher Stan account on Twitter right now, because he is absolutely just lighting the USL on fire right now. And, you know, he's not the fastest guy in the world. He's, you know, he doesn't have like an elite level touch or anything like that. Like, I don't think you could drop him in an MLS lineup and expect him to just destroy MLS defenders too. I don't think that would happen. But he has a confidence about him. I said this on Twitter when we watched the game, you know, when the game was live and I was kind of just tweeting about it. He has a confidence about him that he's willing to take, you know, a 1-on-3 situation, a 1-on-4 situation, that he's not afraid of that by any means. He's willing to do it. And, but not only that, he can actually complete the play, and he does it from distance. So many times he's scoring these goals from just out of nowhere, like, you know, dropping bombs out of a B-17. I mean, it's ridiculous the versatility he has. The versatility he has to just open the field up. You know, defenses cannot, against Indy, and this is going to be something that's going to serve them very well, you know, if he can keep this kind of thing up, is that defenses have to stay spread out because of him. So even if his scoring, you know, stops, let's just say it stops, I can guarantee you that for the next 3 weeks, teams are going to be pressing on him and pressing up the field. Mm-hmm. And that's going to open up doorways for other players. So even if he starts to slow down on the scoring streak that he's on right now, I bet they still get results the way things are going right now. So, and dare I say, Indy the best team in USL right now?
You could definitely make that argument. Here's a thought experiment for you. Could Indy beat Inter Miami?
No. I'm okay. So this was something we talked about on this is actually a discussion on a Discord server. Miami is a fascinating case right now where, okay, sure, they haven't won any of their games. Do you know they've lost every one of those games by a single goal deficit?
By one goal, yeah. Like they haven't been absolutely destroyed played off the field.
Statistically speaking,
they're the best worst team ever.
Yeah, statistically speaking, all of their games are close. They're not blown off the field in like really any significant measurement at all. That's right now just a team that's kind of unlucky. It's a team that hasn't hardly played together. I mean, let's not forget the fact that they're still an expansion team of a bunch of players that have never done this together before. So, and I know I don't want to get sidetracked too much, but no, Miami's actually good. Don't be fooled by them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things where you just hate to see it, or you don't. I'm surprised, but this whole MLS's back tournament is so bizarre that it's hard to draw any important conclusions from any of the games. But let's go ahead. Let's take a look at the Group H standings. I'm eyeing my phone battery life with a wary eye here. I don't want to run out before we get everything done. Despite the draw, the Rowdies still lead Group H with 2 wins, 0 losses, 1 tie. They have 7 points, a +2 goal differential. Second place is Charleston. One win, one loss, 3 points, zero goal differential. The 4 point difference between the Rowdies and Charleston is the most of any group currently, but it's still very early. Like I'm not hanging a hat on that one just yet. Miami doesn't even play for like another like 4 or 5 days, something like that. Like they still haven't gotten a game in yet. Atlanta is 0-2-1. Two losses, one draw, 1 point, minus two in the goal differential. Miami still has not played since their opening day loss at to St. Louis. So 0-1-0 with a minus three goal differential. And the group standings are going to, you know, the group games are going to start to get really important for the Rowdies because they go on the road to Birmingham this week, and then they only have one more out of group game, and that's at Philadelphia Union 2. The Tunion, who got battered 6-1 by the Red Bull 2 last night. So you can take a little peek ahead based on that and look at it. But afterwards, after that, you know, before and after that, it's going to be all this Group H, and that's who the focus is going to get to. But right now, I assume they're there by now, I hope. Weather's been rough today, at least here. I don't know about out in on the way to Birmingham. But the Rowdies have traveled by bus to Birmingham for Saturday's match. Birmingham last year finished with a record of 12-15-7 on the season. Right now, they are unbeaten, 2-0-0. Their last match was a 2-1 win over Charleston. They are coached by former MLS player had a lot of coaching experience in and around MLS with DC United, with Vancouver, one other organization. I typed it in here, but it disappeared. I'm going to butcher the name, I'm sure. Tom Sohn.
Yes.
Longtime MLS player, longtime assistant, frequent interim manager, and led DC United 1 year. But he was the coach of the year that he did that. They play at BBVA Compass Field. I still think they're missing out by not playing at Legion Stadium. I mean, it bang the rocks together, guys. Notable players, you know, goalkeeper Matt Van Okel. Joe Nasko is also one of the goalkeepers there. Tyler Spangenberg, who Rowdies have faced before. Midfielder, Steven, you put names in here just to mess me up, didn't you?
Maybe.
Uh-huh.
He is stumbling on Bolu Watife Akinyode.
Bolu Watife Akinyode. Forward Brian Wright. Wright's got several, I believe he's got he's the team leader in assists. Bruno Lapa has, I believe, 3 goals for them on the year so far. They're getting production from other places. They are definitely improved over last year already. I mean, they loaned Chandler Hoffman back out to somebody, I think, this year, and that's when I kind of thought maybe they weren't putting all their eggs into this basket, but they have played well. Seems to be a wise move. This game is going to be on ESPN Plus. Might have to go find somewhere where I can get a good Wi-Fi signal to watch this. Steven, do you have a prediction? The Rowdies coming off kind of a draw that feels like a loss, going into a very confident Birmingham team on the road, dealing with the challenges of a Corona road trip during these uncertain times. What do you think we're going to see? Are they going to be happy to get out with a point? Is Neil going to demand improvement over the draw? What's going to happen?
I think the Rowdies are going to come out and play better and a more complete game this week than they did this past week. I think, based on what I've seen comments-wise, especially from Neil himself, I think the guys are going to come out and I think they're going to be a little bit more prepared. Again, it's still early in the season in the context that we've played 2 games since the restart. So results are all that matters. You're not going to have your system all the way down. That probably doesn't happen for another like 6 weeks almost before you can actually start talking about real system football. So I think it's going to come down to who's scrappiest and who's going to be coming out and looking for those victories. I think that this will be the strongest matchup I think Birmingham has played so far since the restart, and I think that might catch them a little off guard. So I'm going to be a bit enthusiastic about this, and considering the success we had on their field last year, I'm going to say 2-1 Rowdy's victory.
Ah, okay. Well, the voice in my head, when it's not singing in German, is telling me a 1-1 draw. So I think we're flip-flopping our predictions from last week. You're taking the 2-1 win, and I think I'm going with the 1-1 draw.
Yes.
I think it definitely is the toughest matchup, the strongest matchup that Birmingham's going to have faced so far. The Rowdies do have the benefit of having, an extra game under their belt. But I think the confidence they've gotten is going to be enough to keep them in this, and it's ultimately splitting the points.
Yeah, it's going to be important to note that with another week of rest, is Aduro going to be back? Is Ekra going to be back? Is Johnson going to be capable of playing more than, say, 10 minutes? Whatever happened to Tejada? Tejada didn't even see the field last week. I'm still kind of baffled as to how that happened, considering that we've got 5 subs. Why didn't we use them all? So, I don't know if there was a knock there that maybe they weren't disclosing. As our friend Devin Kerr mentioned, I think on the broadcast, he's like, maybe that's an injury that didn't make it onto the pregame sheet.
Right.
Those are players that are wildly important to our system and just our cohesivity, because they are some of the best players on the team without question. So with another week of rest, how many of those guys end up getting more minutes? I mean, that's 4 really important players right there. So I think if you end up seeing the lineup that came out last week in full play this week, I think that we end up losing that game. So I think if any one of those 4 guys see the field to start the game, I think that immediately makes us better.
Okay.
In my mind.
Before we get into the next couple things, I want to flip the color coding on the rest of the stuff, just because I saw you were once again commentating on the Rowdy's gaming stuff. So I'm gonna leave that to you, because, like I said, I've been out without internet, but I do have some thoughts on some of these other games that we're going to keep an eye on this weekend as well. Other group games, another kind of important Eastern Conference game. Charlotte's going to host Memphis. Memphis might look at this as maybe their best chance to get a win in the early days of the season. But Charlotte, kind of has to be licking their chops at Memphis coming in that's completely unsettled in the key position that helps decide a game, and that's the goalkeeper. I'm also interested to see, did Howard sit out because he wanted to give someone else a chance because he'd gotten off to a rocky start? Did he sit out because he didn't want to play on the pitch? Because I think Memphis plays on grass at their stadium. But I think when they played last weekend, I think that may have been on turf. So is it the thing where he's not wanting to play on turf at this point in his career, or was he just giving a guy a shot? So I want to keep an eye out for that game, see what's going on there. New York is going to host Pittsburgh. Like I said, New York just dropped 6 on Philly Union. Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh. Bob Lilly is Bob Lilly. I mean, we kind of got an undercover shout out on Steal Some Time. I was talking to Scott Stewart. I had DM'd him about, cause they had mentioned him on their last show. And I said something about, we just talked about him as well. What's your opinion about, why hasn't he ever been given a shot at, or offered a shot at the a bigger league or, a club with more resources? And Scott tracks it up to lower league bias, and then mentioned on Steal Some Time this week that numerous people had contacted him in the last week or so about why Bob Lilly is still a diamond in the rough in the lower division. So I'll take that. You got your shot on air after the first goal. that's, you know, that's our undercover shout out from the broadcast team. When I'll take it, I'll claim this one on behalf of the podcast. Charleston's going to host Atlanta. They really are probably their best shot at getting a win to start off. I guess we can see play a little game called who gets a home win first, Charleston or Louisville. I think Charleston's going to pick this one up here. And then the still not likely to be ready for primetime St. Louis, who will not. I can't even say that they're not a playoff team this year because of the format. I think they could be a second place team in their group. But St. Louis is going to host Indy. Indy's going to go on the road, and we're probably going to learn a little bit more. Like, how good is St. Louis? I mean, a lot of people put a lot of stock in Miami, and they knocked Miami off on the opening day. They've had pretty good results so far. Indy, you know, looks to be as good as people are saying, or at least, you know, has the potential to. I still think that they've got some way to go to live up to that potential, but I think they can do it. That could turn out to be a secretly really good game.
Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, I hear you.
And hopefully I can find somewhere. I was told today, I was at school doing some work, and I was told they've beefed up the Wi-Fi at all the schools so where you can sit in the parking lot and get Wi-Fi, you know, on the when not if we all end up having to do some distance learning again this year due to conditions. So maybe I can go just roll up in front of a school and watch on my laptop there.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, hey, if it works, it works, right?
Hey, I'll try it out for this stuff on Saturday, and then I can go back and watch the NWSL finale on Sunday. By the way, did you hear anything about the last NWSL game last night, the last semifinal?
I saw the highlights and stuff. What are you getting at today?
One I was following along on Twitter. Fun game to watch. Chicago went up like 3-0. It was 2-0 at halftime, Chicago. And this is after, you know, a couple rounds of games were decided by penalties that were 0-0s. Houston won the first semifinal, 1-0 in the morning. Chicago's playing Sky Blue. Chicago jumps out to a 2-0 lead, tacks on another kind of midway through the second half. And then rookie, former USF standout Evelyn Viennes gets her first professional goal. I want to say like 70th, 71st minute. 2 minutes later, Julie Ertz with an own goal, and now it's 3-2. I did have to pull up my start using some data, and I watched like the last 10 minutes of that live. That was a fun game. So it's going to be Chicago and Houston in the final on Sunday at Rio Tinto. I got to double check and make sure I know the right time, but I think it's going to be an afternoon game. And then that competition will be done, and hats off to NWSL. They pulled this off, and you know, they're dealing with smaller number of teams and everything, but they've pulled this off with zero medical issues at all, which is very impressive. All right. Give me the Rabbies gaming update, and then let's wrap it up because I have a feeling my battery's not going to last a whole lot longer.
All right. So Rowdy's Gaming, the first ever Community Cup, has officially ended. It ended this week. On Sunday, Luis Lozano, playing as Barcelona, took on Mitchell Leicester, Manchester United. This was a semi-final replay because of not a technicality, but a violation of the rules caused a replay of their semi-final match. Luis Lozano won that match 4-1 to go into the final against Carlos Rueda. Carlos then plays a best of five series against Luis Lozano. Carlos plays as Tottenham. He has been playing as Tottenham the entire tournament.
No wonder he lost.
Luis figured out how to beat Carlos's system, and he was able to beat him to a degree fairly handily. He ends up sweeping Carlos in a three-game set. the games were not particularly close in final scoring, but a lot of those goals came really, really super late for Lewis. Carlos had a couple of plays where the computer gods would just not give him a goal. He had at one point, it was a breakaway. There was a chip of the goalkeeper. It bounces on the turf, and for some reason, the game allowed the ball to bounce all the way up and hit the crossbar rather than just bouncing softly into the net. It is what it is. It's video games.
But hats off to Luis, because I was seeing your tweets about it, and it's extremely rare that Carlos loses, let alone that he's swept in a 5-game series. It's one of those where I'm like, let me double check that I read this right, or am I just glancing at it and missed it? But yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, no, it absolutely was. Yeah, Lewis did a fantastic job. And again, he figured out the system. He kind of knew how Tottenham was playing and legitimately found a way to beat how Carlos was approaching his esports technique there. So, you know, hats off to him. Absolutely hats off to him. And
I mean, let alone just the fact that Carlos is in the final playing as Tottenham for the entire tournament, that tells you how good Carlos is.
Yes. Yeah. And
because I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. I'll say this. Something that's important about this is that everybody that finished in the top four, they're all getting stuff. Because they ended up creating certain Rowdy's branded like gaming type product specifically for top four finalists. So these guys are going to be getting like Rowdy shirts with like a gaming controller patch like on their sleeves and things like that. So like totally, totally cool stuff, as well as a Rowdy's mask, which I thought was interesting because we haven't seen those actually hit the website yet, the web store for the Rowdy's. We had somebody ask
because we haven't seen the web store.
Yeah, well, the web store is out. The web store is online. It's just not, and I don't know if you visited it, but it's masks are listed in the coming soon area for the Tampa Bay Rowdy's web store.
I saw the staff wearing them at the first game when I was there for that one. Lee Cohen and all the stadium staff had them on, and I was kind of like, hey, could you toss one up here? We could do a mask swap after the match. Probably not very sanitary, but I've got some bleach. We can make this work.
We had somebody reach out and ask about if they were going to have masks for sale at some point. I would believe the answer to that's going to eventually be yes, but it probably won't be until the stadium is actually open. And I'm almost wondering if they're not going to bother selling them. Because, you know, if they haven't sold them yet, why not? And I almost wonder if it's because they're going to hand them out potentially. Because that would be a really good handout. A walk in the door handout, you know, thank you for coming type of deal. That would make a really good front door gift for people coming back to the first game.
This just tells you, like, this is how much society has changed in the last couple months and kind of gotten on the same page as other places around the world. Like, we're not talking about bobbleheads or water bottles as you know, great promotional items. It's give me that mask. And, hey, yeah. I'm right on board. I want one, too. Like, I've got a large collection. I'm getting some more from school when we go back to there, and I'm just trying not to think about that at this point right now either. But yeah, like that, you know, teams have been doing the same thing for years now because there really hasn't been, you know, huge changes in merch. But like Roughneck, you know, one of our sponsors, you can go on there and buy. They've got MLS masks for each team with like, you know, skylines and logos. You can do custom ones like. You know, that's going to be the next thing. We're going to start seeing like SG specific masks instead of scarves, I think, coming out. That's going to start happening, I bet.
Agreed.
Maybe we'll make some for the podcast.
Maybe.
Maybe just some generic green and yellow ones.
Well, last but not least, when it comes to e-gaming, this weekend, Carlos is still playing. There's, I think, two games left in the USL tournament for the summer before the playoffs begin. And Carlos, who is currently in third, is playing against the number one team in his division, who is currently 19-0-0. This is going to be as This is going to be as intense and as hard of a match as Carlos will play all year long, probably. I mean, no offense to Luis Lozano, of course, who just swept him, but
right,
you know, like
rumble, young man, rumble.
To go against somebody that's 19-0-0 is, and I think he's got a plus 90 goal differential, if I'm not mistaken.
Holy crap!
This guy is as good as it gets. So I believe that game is on Sunday, if memory serves me correct. Okay. I'm sure Rowdy's Gaming will be putting it out there, and I will be putting it out there on my Twitter as well as we get closer to the day.
This guy has a whole team of Tyler Pashers is what's going on, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. He is honestly as good as it gets. In fact, I think he's the only undefeated player in all of the EUSL leagues. They ended up making, like, I think three or four different divisions when they did it. Right. So, and I'm pretty sure he's the only undefeated one left. So, like, not even a draw. All straight wins. It's remarkable what this guy can do with a video game. So,
wow.
Carlos has one heck of a thing. Carlos did play Cam Hucker was his name. He was playing as Sars Velsfeld, which is important because Velsfeld is a team that at times has given Carlos some trouble. Carlos plays as Nantes, of course. Mm-hmm. Carlos was able to secure a victory at 1-0. So, and that was on, I think that game was on Sunday. And then, of course, the Monday night was the actual final of the tournament itself for Community Cup. So he got that victory beforehand. So another, again, solid victory again, 1-0. It was a tough game. Cam was definitely taking it to him. And again, it's because Sars, the Velsfeld team matches up really well with Nantes on FIFA. So a lot of players have used it against Carlos and just used it in general. So it is what it is on that. But I'll be curious to see what Coach Smith uses as his team. But that's going to be a great game on Sunday.
All right. I'll have to figure out some way to go and watch that, because I'm just guessing I still won't have a connection at that point. I did send them a strongly worded message today. We'll see. They haven't responded to any other ones lately, so who knows? But let's wrap this up. We love you, Steven. I'm going to put you on the spot. Who is your We Love Yous?
My We Love You is not going to be soccer related this week at all. My We Love You is going to be to teachers, not just in Florida, teachers nationwide. Matt, this is kind of a shout out to you as well, obviously.
I try.
What you guys are all going through right now, I can't even imagine. And I know, obviously, off air, I know some of the stuff that you guys are going through as well. You guys are my We Love You, because you guys are being asked to do things in extraordinary circumstances and are basically doing it all on the fly. So I think that's my We Love You this week, because I know that obviously things are still heating up on what's going to happen going forward with you guys in the next couple of weeks as school's kind of getting closer. So again, prayers and thoughts to every teacher across the country, but more specifically, obviously, here and close to home with you, Matt, and everybody else that listens. Because for those that don't know, there's a lot of public school and private school teachers associated with the Tampa Bay Rowdies, like, fan base.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. Like, I think I can name like 7 or 8, like, off the top of my head almost. So, and if not current teachers, there's even a larger number that are former teachers. So, like, seriously, all of you guys are amazing. And that's my We Love You this week.
I'll use that opportunity to plug. I have a mostly unused, underdeveloped additional Twitter account, just because I've noticed, too, the amount of teachers and school personnel that show up at Rowdy's Games. So At Teachers Union SG on Twitter, if you want to follow the unofficial teachers supporters group for your Tampa Bay Rowdies. I need a much better logo. I mean, it's better than Charlotte FC, but still. I was going to throw shade in there or something. Yeah, actually, our school board is currently meeting right now to probably revise and make all these changes to the plan that they came up and voted on last week. And now apparently people are having second thoughts and there's new information. And I've spent the last like 3 days at school doing trainings and stuff for like as we're calling it, when, not if, things force us to have to spend, you know, a week or two or maybe more going back to learning at home. One of the coworkers at my wife's school passed away yesterday. He'd been sick for about 3 weeks, and this is a guy, like, he was drafted by the Packers. Like, I'm finding out, we're reading about it up on him today. My wife knew him like from work, but he's drafted by the Packers. He used to be an assistant coach for the Orlando Predators. He was a coach at UCF. Like, he was 60, like 61, but, you know, in really good shape otherwise, didn't look like that. So it's, and I, you know, I found out today that I've had like one coworker retire rather than come back this year, two take leave of absence until they retire in December. One who has filed for Family Medical Leave Act, and if she doesn't get that, then she's going to resign. She's really young, but she's just recovering from a stroke in the last 2 years. So it's a mess. And for some weird reasons, there's not a lot of people looking to get into the field right now. I don't know why. So we're we're figuring it out as we go. And it will probably change every quarter based on what different kids decide to do. We love you. However, I am going to throw somewhat soccer related. I'm going to give it up for the Soccer Crush podcast, because it's kind of like, you know, we've been doing this. You know, Dan and I started out. We then, you know, Jake and everyone else has come along, and now you've come in as well. We've been doing this for like 6 years now. Sometimes it feels like longer. So it's kind of cool when I see other like shows out there and like, you know, just doing a thing and we can throw some attention or throw some eyeballs their way. And I kind of like their angle at how they do their show. I've listened to it a couple times. It's a pretty fun show. So I like helping other people out who are trying to do similar things. And especially anyone that pays attention, you know, wants to shine a light on us, because that's always helpful. I appreciate that. All right. Our regular thank yous, our scheduled thank yous to Wolfface, to Radio St. Pete, and to Shamrock.
Please share, subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast wherever you find podcasts. They are going to be available. Obviously, you can link to it through our website, but you can find it in very common places such as, like, say, iHeart, for example. iHeart Media carry, you know, we do post them on iHeart as well. So
Stitcher, Spotify, wherever, we're there. If you want to support the show on an ongoing basis, you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/unusedsubspod. There are levels starting at $1 a month all the way up to, what is it, 10 or 20, I think we do, is the biggest one. If you want to, there's people at every level, and we love all of them because they keep this going and keep it from being a straight on our pocket burden. They are our producer. I forgot to name our patron producer for tonight, by the way. I meant to throw that in there. Is Randall Gainforth. Thank you, Randall. We appreciate it. Long time patron for the show. Patreon.com/unusedsubspod.
And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie cutter templates from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for something completely unique and customary for your youth club, Sunday league squad, adult team, or even maybe a pro club, if that's what you're trying to start up, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com.
And lastly, thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. get custom scarves or masks for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. All right, let's wrap this up. We will talk to you guys next week. Somehow, some way, we'll sort it out. All right, Steven, it's been fun as always. It's been weird as always. Let's just go win.
Let's go get a W. All right, let's go Rowdies.
All right, see you guys later.
The Rowdies were there, the Rowdies were there, they get along.